is who I am. Love is all that I can be. All that I can give and take is the difference that I make. Love is who I'm meant to be. And I'm living in your everlasting love. It's your hand upon me, filling me with love. Yes, I'm dwelling in your awe-inspiring, never-ending, overflowing, always with me, everlasting truth of me. As I walk this path of mine, every step is so divine. Love is flying high and free. And I'm living in your everlasting love. It's your hand upon me, filling me with love. Yes, I'm dwelling in your awe-inspiring, never-ending, overflowing, always with me, everlasting love. Holy Spirit, I am standing in your light, for it turns my night to day and darkest night. As I reach to take your hand, I begin to understand all the things that have been hidden from myself. And I'm living in your everlasting love. It's your hand upon me, filling me with love. Yes, I'm dwelling in your awe-inspiring, never-ending, overflowing, always with me, everlasting love. Yes, I'm dwelling in your awe-inspiring, never-ending, overflowing, always with me, everlasting love.
So beautiful. Thank you, Mary Kay, and thank you, our band. Dwelling in your all-inspiring love, the mountain is out when it's not obscured, and you can see that. I'm going to pick up the reading. Again, this is from the Gospel of the Beloved Companion, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, where we've been looking at a vision that represents us waking up and to fully embody all that we are in spirit. I'm going to begin with what happens. There's eight boughs, eight main branches, and I'm going to begin by what happens with the fifth and then take us to the seventh. Only when you have rejected the deceiver. Now, the deceiver, remember, is not an outside Flip Wilson, devil made me do it. The deceiver is the ego mind, the dark side of our own human nature. When you have rejected the deceiver, you can pass through the hardest gate of all to attain the fifth bough and the fruit of clarity and truth. Only then will you know the clarity and truth of your own soul. And knowing yourself, for the first time, understand that you are a child of the living spirit. And as my soul moved upward, I realized that I could no longer hear the voice of the world, for all had become silence. Then in the light above, I saw the sixth bough, the one that bore the fruit of power and healing. My master told me that when you truly have eaten of the fruit of clarity and truth of yourself, Then you could partake of the fruit of power and healing, the power to heal your own soul and thereby make it ready to ascend to the seventh bough, where it will be filled with the fruits of light and goodness. So that's where we are this week, seven. And I saw my soul, now free of all darkness, we could say now free of all illusion, now free of all fog. I saw my soul ascend again to be filled with the light and goodness that is the Spirit. The light and goodness that is the Spirit. And I was filled with a fierce joy as my soul turned to fire and flew upwards in the flames from whence my master showed me the eighth and final bough, upon which burneth the fruit of grace and beauty of spirit. And so today we are talking about the light and goodness that is our own spirit. The mountain is out. The spirit is seen, revealed. When there is no fog, when there is nothing obscuring it, it is all that is there. And so let's move into an experience, if you will, of that today. How many of you have at least one light switch in your home? Everybody. How many of you have a dark switch in your home? Said no one. We may have a switch to lower the blinds. We may have a switch to turn off the light, but a dark switch does not exist. You see, darkness in and of itself is not a presence. It is an absence. Darkness in and of itself is not a presence. It is the absence of light. Darkness is merely an effect. It is not a cause. It is not a presence. Light is a presence. Light is a causative presence. And you know what? The scripture says, you know what Jesus, Yeshua said? You are the light. You are the light of the world, not a light. It said you are the light. You are the light of the world. Matthew 5, starting with verse 14, you are the light of the world, a city on a hill glowing in the night for all to see. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives. Shine. Let your good glow. Don't hide your light. Let it shine. See, darkness is not a presence. Darkness is merely the absence of. We are the light. We are the presence. We are the light of the world. And our job is very clear here. It's to let our light shine. The passage goes on to talk about don't put a bushel over your light. Now, the people that Jesus, Yeshua, was speaking to, they would have understood that, because having a light back in that century was pretty important. I mean, having the resources to have an actual light, those were precious resources. And a lot of people were typically in one household or very close together. And so what would happen is if one person had their little light burning, they'd sometimes get annoyed because the neighbors weren't using their own oil. They were using their light to try to see. And so Jesus was saying, don't try to dim your own light. Don't worry about how it is in relationship to others. Let your light shine. Don't cover it up. So it's very clear that our job is to let the light shine, to know the clarity, the purity, to know the spirit, to know the light and the goodness of our own spirit. And when we know that and that shines forth, that's often called luminosity. A person with a luminous presence, when that shines through. And so to be filled with the light and goodness of our own spirit, and to then also be filled with fierce joy, you know, not just mere happiness or that's dependent on circumstances being okay or not okay, but to be filled with fierce joy, joy that is there in the midst of whatever else may be there. So we're the light of the world. Let your light shine. Now, other faith traditions are speaking and pointing to the same thing in different ways. In the Buddhist tradition says, become empty, become transparent, become the self that you were before you wrapped yourself in a personality, an identity, identifying with these things. Become empty, meaning become transparent, because when you are, there you will discover you are the light. Rumi, the Sufi mystic, said it this way: your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. To seek out those layers, to begin to bring awareness to where there is fog. Last week, as we began to talk about this, we said, you know, you don't typically arrive at enlightenment and boom, you're just there. It's a process that we begin to embody, and we'll have every day we collect stuff. Jesus taught the disciples when they leave a place, they were to shake the dust off their feet. Now, that was symbolic for saying you're going to encounter many things throughout your day, and throughout your day, you're going to collect stuff. Stuff's going to occupy your mind, occupy your heart. You're going to get entangled and become occupied in things. And so it's important to have a practice to shake it off. Just shake your hands and feet a little bit. Just shake off the dust. Shake off the dust. Hoolie the bowl. Turn it upside down. Whatever you need to do. But our job is to have a practice to remember to do these things. Otherwise, we find ourselves becoming hardened. And so do you really know yourself as the light? Really? And do you know anyone that you encounter as the light? That means those people that I lovingly refer to as sandpaper of the soul. Those people that we just may grate our last nerve. But can you find your way to see beyond the annoyance, to see beyond the whatever? Can you find the way to know that they too are the light? Do you know yourself to be the light? Do you know all beings to be the light? And are you in touch with the luminous presence of your soul? Well, just as this exploration is unique in that, you may remember the first bow we encountered was to take in the fruit to become love and compassion. But it also gave us something that we needed to be clear of, and that was judgment and wrath. Wrath is when anger becomes acted out. You know, it's those ill-intended actions. And so there's something unique about this teaching is it tells us, perhaps you could say, if I were to ask you, what is love? How would you define love? If I ask you how to define love, we could all give lots of ways to define love. But to really begin to experience love, sometimes to know what it is to perhaps understand by what it is not. Because if you love is to be free of all judgment and to be free of all wrath. And if you find yourself in that place of no judgment, it doesn't mean no discernment. There's a difference here. If you find yourself in a place that there's no judgment and there's no wrath, it doesn't mean there's no anger. It doesn't mean there's no upset. It means you know how to be responsible and in relationship with your own feelings, your own emotions, your own hurts, your own angst, your own whatever, and don't broadcast that hurt out on other people. And so we could say that love is when there is no judgment, when there is no wrath, what is left? The presence of love, the presence of light. And so our job, again, becomes being very mindful to those things that we collect and how we are in some way obscuring our own light. And so three practical things we want to look at for a few minutes. My space, my stuff, the presence I am. Would you say that with me? My space, my stuff, the presence I am. My space, the space I occupy. Have you ever met someone and started talking to them and you're like, you're in a weird space? You know, what do you mean when you say that? What you mean is like, you know, what is this place you're coming from? The space I occupy, am I in a space of being distracted? Am I in a space of being judgmental? Am I in a space of being real constricted of me against you, us against them? Am I in a space of severed belonging? I have a sense of severed belonging. Am I in a space of defensiveness? Am I in a space of greed? Or am I in a space of being learning and receptive? Am I in a space of joy and compassion? Am I in a space of privilege and dominance? Am I in a space of honor and respect? What space am I in? To begin to bring awareness and to ask ourselves, what space am I in? When I was in the seminary at Unity, one of my teachers, the late Reverend Skye St. John, just an amazing individual, wonderful speaker, musician, he taught a lot of our speaking classes, and one of the things he said that he learned when he was in the theater is that whenever you begin to speak to people, whether it's one person, just a comfortable conversation, or maybe one person around the dinner table and it's a hard conversation, whether it's in a room this size or whether it's in an auditorium of 10,000, he said one of the things that actors are taught to do, people, I shouldn't say, that presenters are taught to do, is when they go into a space to just go within their own self and to fill the space. That, for example, when I come into this room, I can look at all the corners of the room, the whole space, and I fill it with what's in my heart so that I can be at home. You see, if I'm a bundle of nerves, if I'm totally worried about what you're thinking, I'm not being able to be present. And so when we ask ourselves, what space am I in? It's a good practice to stop and breathe occasionally and say, what space am I in? And how am I filling the space that I'm in? There's two terms, indigenous and endogenous, and the best ways to describe them are with a thermostat and a thermometer. When you, this room, a thermometer reads the room. A thermostat sets the temperature of the room. The space that I occupy, am I showing up as a thermometer? Am I just going to read the room? Or am I going to take responsibility to be the thermostat, to set the tone in this room for me? And do you hear? It's not for anybody else. It's for who? It's for me. It's for you. To know how do I fill the space? How do I occupy my space? In our culture, in every culture, one of the things that we do about how we occupy a space is a greeting. We have greetings in every country, every tradition, different greetings. But a greeting between two people is meant to establish the space that you will occupy together. That's why, for example, in many of the Asian traditions, the greeting is what? Namaste. That when you, Julia, and I meet and we say namaste, it says, I honor the sacred presence in you. You honor the sacred presence in me. We just established a space of honoring the sacred presence. Aloha, I mentioned Hawaii before. Alo means presence. Ha means the breath. To greet someone and to say aloha says, I am in this shared presence. I share the presence of the sacred breath with you is what aloha means. I share the presence of the sacred breath with you. Now, interestingly, in our culture, when we greet someone, we typically do a handshake. Do you know the history behind the handshake? The history behind the handshake, it says, I carry no weapon. I'm not here to kill you. Now, there's a lot of distance between, hey, I'm not going to kill you, and I behold the divinity in you. I'm just saying. Perhaps we could make our handshakes make something different, that it's time perhaps we upgrade that. And even with a handshake, I'm going to allow that handshake to mean something like, I extend my holy hand to your holy hand, my holy heart to your holy heart. How many of you would be willing to do that? Do you see how that is taking responsibility for setting the space in which we will begin to meet together? How shall we fill the space? How do I occupy the space? Because however I occupy the space, we're talking about being transparent and luminous and open. And so how I occupy the space has everything to do with, am I filling it with fog or am I filling it with light? Am I filling it with light or am I filling it with shadows? There's a scripture in the Bible that it has many layers of meaning, but it speaks directly to this as well. It's found in the Gospel of John, chapter 5. It's referred to as the man by the pool of Bethesda. a little bit Bethesda, the five pools. This symbolically represents our five senses and being at that level of what I call horizontal living. You know, we get stuck at horizontal living and forget that we are vertical beings. And so this is being stuck at that level. John chapter 5, it says, "And there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went to Jerusalem. And now Jerusalem is by the sheep gate, a pool, which in Hebrew is called Bethesda, having five porches. And in these porches there lay a great multitude of sick people, blind, lame, paralyzed, waiting for the water to be moved. Because an angel would go down at a certain time to the pool and stir the water. And whomever stepped in first after the stirring of the water would be made well of disease. Now this man had an infirmity and had been there for 38 years. 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there, and this is important, Jesus already knew he had been there that long and the condition that he was in. But Jesus asked him, 'Do you want to be made whole?' The sick man answered, 'Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred. But while I am coming, another steps in before me.' Jesus said, 'Rise, take your bed and walk.' And immediately the man was made well. He took up his bed and he walked." Why, if Jesus knew he'd been there for 38 years, why, if he knew he was sick, did he say, "Do you want to be made well?" Because he wanted the man to be aware of the space that he was occupying in that moment. He didn't say, "Yes, I want to be made whole." He had been stuck at that level for so long that that's what completely occupied him. Are you feeling that? That when you get stuck there so long, and it's not to say that he did anything wrong, but the point of the story is, do you now, what do you now want? What space do you now occupy? And do you have practices and ways to clear out the fog and be present to whatever needs your attention, whatever you may need to deal with, but don't lose sight of what space do I ultimately occupy at this time? Sometimes humor really drives the point home. There's these three guys who were driving through Louisiana. Are you here? She's not here. Patrice, I was going to get her to pronounce it. They're driving through Louisiana, and they come across a sign, they were entering into the town, and the town is pronounced this, Natchitoches. And so they're arguing about is it Natchitoches, Nacatish? They're just arguing in the car about how to pronounce this town that they've now arrived in. So finally, they stop for lunch. In this time, they're getting their food, and one of the guys says to the cashier, "Can you settle an argument for us very slowly? Would you tell us where we are?" And the cashier leaned over the counter and said, "Burger King." I love that because have you ever got so caught up in some argument or something you're trying to figure out, something you're trying to get control of, that you've lost sight of what is the space I now occupy? What's the space I occupy now? Richard, would you give me that song? When Einstein was around, he was an individual, a lot of controversy around him, the way he was, the information he was presenting. One of his friends one day said, "Einstein, you are attacked by a lot of people. There are slings and arrows of hate. How are you handling this?" And Einstein said, "Those arrows of hate come from a dimension which I do not inhabit. I do not live there. Therefore, they do not touch my being." Isn't that powerful? I don't inhabit that dimension. I occupy a different space. What space do you occupy now? What space do we occupy now? Michael Lerner, a PhD, he's a president and founder of Commonwealth. He said, there are ideas we have about ourselves, our lives, what we want, what we don't want, what we do that's right and not right, what other people do that's right and not right. Michael said, when I had a heart attack, my heart attack, I felt as though I was reborn. Even though I had been working with cancer patients for 18 years, I had been dancing with their death for 18 years. But when I had my heart attack, there was a profound rebirth experience. Michael said, my beloved wife says that after the heart attack, I spent the first 3 months just rearranging the rocks in our garden. I suppose it reflected the rearranging that was taking place inside of me, almost as if my old life had been blown away, blown wide open, all the dust out, all the fog blown out, to create this incredible opportunity. Opportunity that says, how now shall I occupy the space of my life? Where is my energy? Where's my attention? Where is my presence rooted? What occupies me and what space do I occupy? What space do I occupy? What occupies me? They're really one and the same. And then the presence. I occupy the presence I am. See, contemplation and meditation are not meant to be separate from our daily lives. They're meant to help us create that bridge from horizontal living. There's a beginning and an end. As Jesus said, you're in this world, but you're not of this world. You have your being of spirit. And something beautiful happens, as Mark Twain says, the two most beautiful days of your life are the day you're born and the day you discover why. Many people have seen through the veil, have seen behind the curtain, know and would agree that we are spirit, here to be perfectly human. And yet, are we really committed to fully awaken this deeper reality of being? I believe that we are. I believe that now is the time, and we are the ones, and this is the place. How many of you can feel something stirring in your soul that you know is calling you to another layer of peeling the onion, another layer of unfolding? Well, we want to take this into a time of extended meditation today to go in that. We're going to begin with the song that has become the theme song for this series. It says, I am opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous love light of the one. I am opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous love light of the one. I am opening, I am opening, I am opening, I am opening, I am. Close your eyes. And if it's comfortable and you can do so, bring yourself a little bit forward in the chair so nothing is supporting your back. If it's comfortable for you. And now to sit a little more uprightly to feel the strength of your spine. Notice where your shoulders are and see if they would like to just drop and relax a little bit. just with a breath, see if your shoulders would like to drop and relax a little bit more. I am opening as a flower opens to the sun. Not that anything or anyone would force it to open. The very sun, the divine, encoded it with an intelligence, with a beauty, with an idea, a perfect pattern of being. And that flower will naturally unfold. It will open. It will reveal its essence. It will show its true colors. It will realize and actualize its potential. All it needs is the conditions be favorable for those that potential to come forth. You are no different than the flower or the sun or any seed. You are the seed of God, the divine idea. You are the image, the likeness, the empatterned presence of God. And just as the flower is encoded with the intelligence to bloom, you too are encoded with the intelligence to bloom, to shine, to allow the luminosity of your soul, to allow the love, the light, the joy, the recognition of knowing the same light, of beholding the same presence in every other creation. You are already seated and created, for you are this. And yet, maintaining your conditions may be, yes, are, more challenging than just that of a flower. For you must maintain the conditions that surround your thinking. You must maintain the conditions that surround your heart. You must maintain the conditions that surround your identity and who you say you are. As you become aware of your capacity to notice those conditions, to notice the clouds that weigh down the mind, to notice the thoughts that would be hurtful to self or another, to notice the judgments that not only make you heavy, but that sever your own sense of connectedness, to notice those feelings that would put some in and some out, some worthy and some unworthy, some aspects of your own being worthy and unworthy. It's not of judgment, it is of observation. Or to become aware. To become aware is to become painfully aware of those things that we do that create the fog in our own soul. And as we become painfully aware, it is that pain that will break forth into a new layer of blossoming of your own divine potential. So never be dismayed at the pain. For my friend, pain is not suffering. Suffering happens when you've lost sight of the value that can be gained in the midst of any pain. So breathe again and lower your shoulders once more. And lift your head and feel your feet planted firmly. And know that you have been sent for such a time as this. Know that it is true, you are the light. You are the luminous soul. You are the luminous spirit. So shake off the dust. What has been, I am here now. So we are all opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous love light of the one. We surrender what we hold. We surrender what we withhold. We surrender. 'Cause we are opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous love light of the one. We are opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous love light of the one. I'm going to ask you to open your eyes and to smile, because you get to. You can. And to stand in your own space. Actually stand. Be very mindful of the space you occupy. And I'm going to sing this through one time, and I'm just going to ask you to notice the space that you're occupying with everyone else here. Just to turn around and notice. You don't have to touch them or hug on them or kiss them or anything. Just notice the space you're occupying with them. We are opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous love light of the one. We're opening up in sweet surrender to the luminous love light of the one. We are opening. We are opening. We are
opening up in sweet surrender to the Lord.